the poorest conditions come alongside the National Weather Service's warning of a dangerous heat wave with record-breaking temperatures projected for the Pacific Northwest and into Southern California this weekend and into the next week. Temperatures could soar well into record-breaking territory, the agency said, with Washington and Oregon expected to see temperatures in the 90s and triple digits, 20 to 30 degrees above average. Human health will be at risk, the service said. Several high temperature records should fall throughout the Northwest, with monthly and even all-time records in jeopardy by the upcoming days. Excessive heat warnings have been issued for nearly all of Washington and Oregon, as well as much of Idaho and North California. Heat of this magnitude can be extremely dangerous if proper precautions aren't taken. Residents are urged to stay hydrated, avoid extended amounts of time outdoors, and stay in air-conditioned rooms. Nighttime temperatures are only expected to briefly cool into the 70s throughout the lower elevations, which can significantly increase the threat for heat-related illnesses. The National Interagency Fire Center says there are 54 large fires currently burning and has moved the fire preparedness level to 4 out of the 5. The second earliest level has increased to 4 since 1990. Drought is also driven by La Nina conditions, which were in place through winter 2020 to 2021. NOAA noted that there is evidence climate change has played a hand in creating this reality, with heat waves occurring more often and lasting longer since 1960s, and temperatures rising steadily due to the release of greenhouse gases. Scientists warned last year that the worst ever climate-spurred mega droughts could devastate the West U.S. based on 1,200 years of tree ring data, modern weather observations, and 31 advanced climate models. Going back more than 1,000 years, there is evidence that naturally driven mega droughts have laid waste to the region several times, often leading to social upheavals among indigenous civilizations. Residents have been told to brace for impact and are advised to take precautionary measures this summer to help protect themselves from a myriad of worries. Grasshoppers, with thriving warm and arid weather, have taken over and are beginning to denude trees. A number of cities in Utah have banned fireworks ahead of the 4th of July, worried about sparking devastating wildfires. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildfire is reportedly considering relocating some fish species to save them and doing away with bag limits for recreational anglers. New Mexico parks have closed boat ramps throughout the state as reservoirs dry up. Water supply is a common problem across the West, with 1,500 critical California reservoirs lower than half of what they should be this time of year, and Idaho water managers cutting off irrigation flows to farmers. Thousands of farmers in the Golden State have been warned that they could face a similar fate.
economic divide.
Welcome to Economic Divide. I'm Kavitav Laiv. In today's program, we're going to take a look at vaccine inequality, specifically countries that imported it. But we will zoom in on Iran's first domestically developed vaccine, which actually received emergency use authorization recently. The name, Cobiran Barakat. Well, coming up in today's program, we're going to take a look, as I mentioned, the vaccine hoarding. Yes, it is still taking place. The U.S. and the U.K. still stand accused of stocking up. During the G7, 1 billion doses were pledged, but will they deliver? Campaigners say that is not enough. Enter Iran's Cobiran Barakat coronavirus vaccine. Yes, Iran has produced it, ready for administration for emergency. Will Iran be a center for vaccine production and distribution, slated for production in the millions monthly? Then we will take a look at the COVAX scheme. You may have heard about it, but it sounds more like a failed scheme or one for richer countries. Why did it fall short when it was supposed to cover 92 countries, starting with healthcare workers and the most vulnerable groups?
COVID-19 pandemic continues to take lives. It knows no boundaries, but some countries are drawing them, like rich nations called the G7. They're the ones that are supposed to lead the world. Why are they failing when it comes to the COVID-19 vaccine?
The United States will purchase a 500 million doses of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine to donate to nearly 100 nations that are in dire need in the fight against this pandemic.
I'm very pleased to announce that this weekend, leaders have pledged over 1 billion doses, either directly or through funding to COVAX. That includes 100 million from the UK to the world's poorest countries, which is another big step towards vaccinating the world.
And we're bitterly disappointed to see the lack of action that's needed. These are seven of the most powerful countries in the world. You know, what they do matters. And when they decide to do very little and look at spin instead of substance, to cook the books, to cook the planet, then that's just not good enough. So yes, we're really disappointed. They could have done a lot more and they failed.
The G7 nations account for around 40% of the global GDP. That is around $35 trillion. They can certainly afford to have the whole world vaccinated. When it comes to the doses needed, 11 billion.
This G7 is meeting as the pandemic still rages. Vaccine justice has to be at the top of their agenda. And that means three things. The G7 needs to share doses. It needs to share technology and know-how so that we can scale up manufacturing capacity. But most of all, they need to share the bill. We've estimated it costs anywhere between $50 and $66 billion to vaccinate the world. That's what they've said they want to do, so now it's time for...
The G7 meeting held recently really let the world down when it came to COVID vaccines. They were slammed for falling short, from campaigners to health organizations. After all, the group of seven wealthiest nations, by definition, are the ones who can afford to provide vaccine relief for the countries that need it. The UN's Emergency Relief Coordinator slammed the group for failing to come up with a plan to vaccinate the world against COVID-19.
What the G7, I think, should have done was develop a genuine global plan to vaccinate the world. It would cost, the IMF has worked out the cost of this, it would cost around $50 billion. It could be paid over a period of years. That, by the way, is the deal of the century, because until the pandemic ends, everybody is going to face huge risks and potential problems. So these sporadic, small-scale, charitable handouts from rich countries to poor countries is not a serious plan. It will not bring the pandemic to an end.
The World Health Organization chief also weighed in and said the G7 nations need to do more to deal with the global COVID crisis.
I welcome the support expressed by the G7 for WHO, the ACT Accelerator, and the idea of a treaty on pandemic preparedness and response. And I welcome the announcement that G7 countries will donate 870 million vaccine doses, primarily through COVAX. This is a big help, but we need more, and we need them faster. More than 10,000 people are dying every day.
Let me bring in Norman Stockwell here. He is a radio host and political commentator. He is also the publisher of the Progressive magazine, which has the slogan, A Voice for Peace and Social Justice, since 1909. Norman, welcome. Well, the fact that the world's wealthiest countries are getting vaccinated by as much as 25 times faster is not new news, but the fact that this is continuing is. Why do countries like the U.S. continue doing this? Do they not realize that the vaccine has no boundaries?
I think that the amount of doses being offered are absolutely a drop in the bucket, and we've seen certainly here in the United States that the country was very, very cautious about releasing doses, hoarding doses, really, of the vaccine for a very long time, partly with a notion of protecting the local residents first before sharing vaccines with the rest of the world. And I do think this is a very short-sighted approach because the vaccine does not know boundaries.
We're headed for a quick break here on Economic Divide, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. For our in-depth section, we are going to take a look at what's called the COVAX scheme. Now, you may have heard about it. We will also take a look at how Iran's Covid-Iran Barakat fits into that. Now, COVAX was created to ensure that COVID vaccines were made available around the world. That's why they created this somewhat of a bank in order to reach that goal. Now, richer countries, they had promised subsidizing costs for poorer nations.
I really believe we need to ensure access, availability and access to vaccines throughout the world, not just in the countries who have the means to pay for them.
Well, that is easier said than done. But the goal of the COVAX scheme actually centers on distribution. In terms of the distribution, what is their goal? Where they have said that they want to have 20% of the world population to be vaccinated. That would be spread to 92 countries. The 20% is the maximum limit set by the administrators of COVAX, like WHO. When it comes to the number of doses, its initial goal is 2 billion, and that's the number of doses for the year 2021. For the year 2022, 1.8 billion doses. But so far, only 4% of the more than 2 billion shots administered worldwide to date have been administered. Now, based on the math that we have calculated, that means that only about 80 million out of the 2 billion doses has been administered.
This terrible pandemic, and I think emergencies require innovative solutions. We're simply not getting enough vaccine to poorer countries. It's so slow, and we have to do something about it.
Okay. Obviously, COVAX is conditioned that no country will receive vaccines for more than 20% of their population before others has failed miserably. Why? Well, the short answer, wealthy countries bought most of the new vaccines before they were even approved by regulators for emergency use by COVAX. Those countries were the UK, Canada, the UK, and also France. Well, this is the perfect time right now to take a look at the world map to see how much of each country's population has actually been vaccinated. Now, this is the map as of June 15th, the latest data available, the source official data of our world. Canada, for example, has 65.4% of its population to have been vaccinated, Canada being one of the G7 countries. That is one of the highest of their population to have been vaccinated. The U.S. coming in second, 52.2% of their population to have been vaccinated. Now, keep in mind that these are the first dose of the vaccination, so the double dose figure is still something that needs to be administered. Next comes Chile in South America, coming in at 61.4%, and we can see Brazil, very low percentage of their population, of its population, to have been vaccinated at 26.6%. The UK, high figure, 61.6%. Now, at this point, the double dose there has actually been administered to that percentage of the population. Next up, France, 45%. Keep in mind, UK, France, Canada, the US, the G7 countries, obviously wealthy nations are able to not only hoard the vaccine, purchase it, but to administer it then to the population on a wide scale. Israel, 63.4%. We reported in one of our other programs about how Israel paid top dollar and top money to buy the vaccination from manufacturers. This is the sad one. Kenya in Africa, 1.8% of the population. Why does that have to be that low? Again, Africa has been one of the victims, along with many other countries, not to get enough doses. Russia, one of the creators, one of the manufacturers of the vaccine, coming in at the figure that you just saw, 12.7%. India is suffering so much. We're looking at 15.1% only of the population to have been vaccinated. And then China. China, this figure actually got updated just right before we ran the program. It was at around 15%. It went up to 40%. They actually hit the 1 billion mark in terms of the number of people to have been vaccinated. So there you have an overview of what has happened around the world. Now, where does Iran's Kobi-1 Barakat fit into the picture? Well, let's take a look at the production numbers first of what has been produced and what is projected. This is the actual number to have been produced for the month of May, 1 million doses of Kobi-1 Barakat, which will go then up to 3 million for the month of June. Followed by the month of July, 10 to 12 million. You can see a big jump there. And then for the month of August, we are looking at the figure 13 to 15 million. Now, this would have been a lot easier had there been no sanctions on some of the chemicals, for example, and other things that were needed to develop the vaccines. Which brings us to the question, is it the strategy of the U.S. and other Western countries to continue sanctions to prevent Iran's advancements, like in vaccine production, for their own benefit? Well, let's bring in Ahmad Kiai. His Twitter address, @EKiai. He's the director of the Middle East Treaty Organization, one that seeks to eradicate all WMDs from the Middle East, who joins us now to give us his thought on this. Ahmad Kiai, when we take a look at the countries that have actually, I don't want to use the word hoarding, but that's what they have been called in terms of what they have done, U.S., U.K., and France, for example, and Canada. And these are the G7 countries. Why are they not seeing the bigger picture in terms of how their nationalism has taken over their logic to prevent people from dying? Why has that happened?
The truth and the frank answer to this is power, influence, and the vaccine diplomacy or political pressure that it comes with the distribution of such vaccines. The Western countries have to realize that by hoarding these vaccines and not allowing for a fair distribution of it, they are also hurting themselves. It is not a charity for Western countries to open up the gates to the distribution of vaccine. It is in their national interest, actually, to be able to have this pandemic brought into control and for economic revival on a global scale to occur, because we are interconnected. So I think that it is a missed opportunity for the Western countries and industrial countries to take advantage of the fact that they're able to then provide a helping hand in bringing this pandemic to an end.
Major announcement, a major breakthrough. It finally paid off. After a year of intensive work, Iran has joined the club of countries in the world with the capacity to produce COVID-19 vaccine. The Kobi-1 Barakat coronavirus vaccine has received approval for public inoculations for emergency use. Kobi-1 Barakat was unveiled on December 29, 2020, and started to be mass-produced on March
29. خرداد این بین 3 تا 4 میلیون واکسن رو باز تحویل خواهیم داد. در تیر این به 10 تا 12 میلیون خواهد رسید.
It's been developed by Shifa Pharmaceuticals, a subsidiary of the Iranian economic and industrial conglomerate Setad. The factory says its production capacity will reach between 12 to 15 million doses per month in the summer. out of 16 vaccine production cases, 4 cases have received the Code of Ethics and are undergoing clinical trials. It is hoped that another 3 to 4 cases will succeed, receiving licenses by September. Coviron Barakat vaccine developers are planning to get the approval from the World Health Organization for the Iranian vaccine to be listed as one of the safest COVID-19 vaccines for emergency use. Iran is also currently producing vaccines jointly with 3 countries, Cuba, Russia, and Australia, and all of this while it's been under sanctions. Something very interesting has happened recently, which really poses more questions than answers. Now, as of June 19, the European Union opened its doors to Americans who were either vaccinated or not. Yes, you heard it right. The European Council updated its list of countries whose citizens and residents should be allowed to travel freely to the bloc's 27 member nations. Now, does this mean that this is now a way for countries like European countries to contain the flow of the population inside its borders? After all, Europe has been very keen to stop the flow of migrants, just like the U.S. Joining us for this segment is Shaho Osabar, who's a lecturer at the University of Tehran. He's also a member of the UNESCO Chair on Cyberspace and Culture. And we also have Emad Kiai, who's the director of the Middle East Treaty Organization, who's rejoining us for our three-way Q&A. First, I want to talk to you, Shaho. Countries like Iran, maybe that's the answer here. Iran is ready to apply the Coviron Barakat vaccine for emergency use among 4 vaccines that are being developed in Iran to tackle the pandemic. Iran has also announced that it's going to be ready to ship the vaccines in a few months. What do you think?
Well, I believe vaccines are among the most strategic products in any country. So you look at Iran's situation in the past 4 years, and you see, well, Iran was under a lot of pressure. Iranian people suffered a lot because of sanctions and because they were not able to get their hands on important equipment, medical equipment, and important medicines fast enough. Right now, Western countries, especially the United States, claim that, well, no, we haven't, but without sanctions, do not apply on specific stuff like medicine. But the fact is, when a country is under a lot of pressure, under so many sanctions, and under the so-called maximum pressure policy, any kind of purchase would be delayed. No kind of purchase can be fast enough, especially when it comes to important medical stuff.
Okay. Well, Emad, let me come to you. I'm gonna address this in a different way in terms of what Iran can do. Ready to supply the Coviron Barakat vaccine. It has been approved, as I mentioned, by the country's health ministry for emergency use. And Coviron Barakat is the top candidate among 4 vaccines being developed in Iran to tackle the coronavirus pandemic. Announced also Iran to be ready to ship the vaccines in a matter of months. Doesn't this break any idea of how Europe or the U.S. maybe has a monopoly on this?
Well, it shatters that idea that only developed or industrialized countries have a monopoly over the vaccine and its production. We have to congratulate Iran and other countries such as Cuba and other developing countries who have advanced in developing their vaccines. However, here is important note to make that while Barakat is being spearheaded for Iran to vaccinate the population, there is other mechanisms to be able to speed the distribution of vaccines to the population of Iran, in addition to Barakat, of other vaccines that are in development. So I think that while Iran has showcased to the international community that under extreme conditions of sanctions, of economic hardship, and the pandemic itself, it's been able to make this breakthrough. But I believe that it is also in the essence of it, we know that Iran has also indicated that when it goes into mass production for the Barakat vaccine, that it's open to providing it to other countries. Now, this is phenomenal, because a country that is already in dire situation is still saying that if we are able to make this vaccine at a high level, in production, we will be open to providing you, other countries, low-income countries, with this vaccination.
This is our InfoNews section, where we inform you of other economic news from around the world. First up, let's take a look at this piece of news that caught our attention. It's based on the G7, and it's the G7 anti-China stance. In their final communique, they rallied around the need to counter and to compete with China. One way of doing this, the G7 aims to counter Xi's Belt and Road Initiative. It's known as the Build Back Better World. B3W for short, price tag $40 trillion to counter China's Belt and Road Initiative. Let's see if that works out. Where's the money going to come from? Okay, next up, the world's displays, very important topic. Global displaced population hits an all-time high. At this point, that all-time high is roughly around 82 million, as you're about to see. This figure of 82 million, which is the number of displays, just came out in the most recent report. And that article said that it's a tragedy how so many children are being born into exile. That obviously needs more of an effort to prevent and to end conflict and violence. And it's been called an epic failure of humanity because it's one of the highest numbers. All right, next up, the topic, child labor setback. Why? Because the U.S. High Court actually... it's really something to be worried about because the U.S. High Court has sided with corporate giants, in this case, Nestle and Cargill. And that is a child slavery case. The lawyers for the plaintiffs have argued that Nestle and Cargill have total control of the production of coca in Côte d'Ivoire, where child labor is very widespread. Moving on to our final story, it's another, actually, court case, this one happening in Brazil. A bill backed by the country's farm sector would limit the recognition of reservation lands. The legislation, it was first tabled back in the year 2007, and that would actually assign the year 1988 as the cutoff date for the demarcation of reservation lands if they were not occupied at that time. This has been called an unacceptable setback for indigenous rights, especially for their lands. So here we are. As we speak, people are dying by the minute around the world. This is the WHO chief speaking just on June 15th.
During this press conference alone, more than 420 people will die.
Quite shocking, isn't it? Let's not forget another alarming factor, variants. They are popping up around the world. So on the one hand, you have the COVID-19, and then you have the variants as well. Then you have countries that have had the first jab, but not the second one yet. And if they don't get it in time, well then, they're gonna be susceptible to catching the disease. And then you have countries like the US, UK, or the G7 bloc saying that they will pledge 1 billion doses, worried about patents and money. I ask you, do they see the severity of the situation? What is truly surprising is that they don't even see how this vaccine hoarding hurts their own pockets. Many of these developing nations are headquarters of the factories in these developing countries which produce their products from clothes to you name it. Now, Iran is ramping up its production of Coviran Barakat, and God willing, it will reach a volume enough for worldwide distribution. The U.S. needs to remove its sanctions, however, to save human lives, if that is something that figures in its calculations. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. Your questions and comments are always welcome. Thanks for being with us for this edition. From Miko Vitahoy and the entire team, it's goodbye.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. Deutsche Radio.
In the limelight.
Masked Zionist troops will still terrorize Palestinian children in the middle of the night, but new military jargon will hide the true purpose, says Jonathan Cook, journalist, in an article titled, Israeli regime's night raids on Palestinian families aren't over. Please stay tuned for the first part of the article. The videos are all over YouTube. Masked Israeli regime troops storm a Palestinian family's home in the middle of the night. Parents dressed in nightwear are suddenly surrounded by heavily armed men. Young children are forced awake with a mix of blurry-eyed confusion and fear. They are made to answer questions posed to them in broken Arabic by these faceless armed strangers. They are lined up in one room while the Zionists take photographs of them holding their identity cards. And then, just as suddenly as they arrived, the masked men disappear into the night. There are no questions beyond identifying the people in the house. No one is arrested. There is no obvious purpose, just a family's sense of security permanently wrecked. To most people watching these startling videos, such scenes look like an Orwellian nightmare. And sure enough, Israeli regime has given this procedure an Orwellian name, intel mapping. Last week, under pressure from the courts, the Israeli regime army announced that it had ended the practice of mapping, unless, and this will be a loophole easily exploited, there are exceptional circumstances. Given that the families whose homes, privacy, and dignity are invaded are not suspected of any offense, it is difficult to imagine what exceptional circumstances could ever justify these degrading and terrifying raids. In announcing its decision, the Israeli regime army said that in the digital age, there were other tools it could use to gain intelligence on Palestinians, beyond randomly invading their homes with guns in the middle of the night. A statement added that it was a humanitarian gesture aimed at mitigating the disruption of citizens' everyday life. Palestinians are subjects without rights living under a belligerent military occupation. And this is not about disruption. Palestinians aren't facing an unexpected train delay, but a form of collective punishment, and therefore a war crime. As a report by three Israeli human rights organizations published last November observed, it is highly doubtful that any instance of mapping could be considered legal under international law. Nonetheless, these home invasions are commonplace. They're integral to the Israeli regime's army policy of surveilling, controlling, and persecuting Palestinians. According to figures compiled by the United Nations, the Israeli regime army carried out around 6,400 search or arrest operations in 2017 and 2018 alone, with each operation potentially including more than one home. Research by Yesh Din, an Israeli human rights group, shows that the vast majority of such operations start between midnight and 5 a.m. In a quarter of cases, Israeli regime troops break down the door to enter. And in a third of cases, a family member is physically assaulted. Two-thirds of families have experienced these invasions more than once. Intel mapping operations have been particularly difficult for the army to justify on any kind of security grounds. That led earlier this year to unwelcome scrutiny from the Israeli regime's top court, which gave the army until August to divulge the wording of its mapping protocol. The army's cancellation of the practice means the rationale for traumatizing thousands of Palestinian families over many years will continue to be a secret. The reality is that mapping was never really about building up a more accurate picture of Palestinian society. It has many other far more sinister aims. In practical terms, it is used to train young Israeli regime troops, familiarizing them with the techniques of invading Palestinian homes and intimidating Palestinians, all in a safe environment for the troops. The army knows that Palestinian parents will be primarily concerned with protecting their children from the terrifying presence of armed intruders in what should be the family's safest space. In testimony to Breaking the Silence, an organization for whistleblowing Israeli regime troops, one troop observed, "There is rarely an operational motivation for it. Often the motivation is practice, meaning we got a breaching tool for forcing open doors for the first time. No one knows how to use it, so it is decided that we break into a house now." But there are other, even darker purposes behind these random mapping raids. They are part of the gradual process by which the army acculturates its young troops into a life of committing habitual war crimes. It breaks down their sense of morality and any remnants of compassion after years of exposure in the Israeli regime's school system to anti-Palestinian racism. It turns Palestinians into nothing more than objects of suspicion and fear for the troops. Or, as one Palestinian woman told Yeshdin, the way they banged and came into the house was like entering somewhere with animals, not people. Terrorizing Palestinians, even children, quickly becomes part of the humdrum routine of military duties. But most important of all, home invasions traumatize Palestinians in ways designed to entrench the occupation and make it more permanent. They are a form of psychological warfare, a campaign of terror against both the families and the communities they live in. They reinforce the message that the Israeli regime army is everywhere, controlling the smallest details of Palestinians' lives. Several troops told Breaking the Silence that the goal was to make Palestinians feel persecuted. One noted, "The bigger mission was to instill a sense of persecution in the Palestinian population." That's not my phrase. It's a phrase that actually appeared in military presentations and briefings. The troops take this guidance to heart. One said he understood the purpose of hiding his face was to be more intimidating, scarier, and then maybe you get less resistance. Mapping raids are designed to make Palestinians believe that any kind of opposition to the occupation is futile or counterproductive. Home invasions leave permanent scars, as women often describe feeling violated and losing a sense of pride in their home, while men suffer from the trauma associated with being unable to protect their wives and children. Children are left with anxiety and sleep disorders, and they struggle at school. is a further goal to these mapping operations when Zionist settlements have been built close to the Palestinian families being targeted. Home invasions take place on a regular basis for these families, serving as a form of pressure to engage them to abandon their homes so the settlers can replace them. A 2019 UN survey of an area of Al-Khalil coveted by settlers found that, over a three-year period, 75% of Palestinian homes in the neighborhood had been mapped. One resident, whose home was raided more than 20 times, told Yeshdin researchers, "I think the entry by soldiers is just harassment to drive us out of the house."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Efforts of Iranian scientists to produce COVID vaccine should be appreciated. June 25th, 2021. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I am truly grateful to all those who worked hard using their knowledge and experience and who made scientific and practical efforts to provide the country with such a great, prestigious capability, the COVID vaccine. Once again, I would also like to thank Dr. Namaki, the Honorable Minister of Health, and all those who were involved in this endeavor. I thank Dr. Mukhbir for his hard work and effort. Praise God, he was successful in this endeavor as he was in the other endeavors that he was involved in. He has shown and proved that he is caring, enthusiastic, competent, and innovative in various areas. I also sincerely thank Dr. Marandi and Dr. Sajjadi for their continuous diligence in taking care of my health, and I hope that, God willing, all these gentlemen will always be successful. They have been insisting for several months now that I should be vaccinated. First of all, I did not want to use the non-Iranian vaccine. I told the friends, both those who insisted and some other friends, that I would wait for the vaccine to be produced inside the country, God willing, and that I would use our own vaccine. It is very important to honor this national achievement in the true sense of the word. Why should we not use it when we have the opportunity to prevent or cure a disease inside the country? Of course, there are times when foreign vaccines are needed and used in addition to domestic vaccines. This is not a problem, and I am all right with this. But in the end, we should respect and appreciate the Iranian vaccine, their efforts, and the scientists who worked with Mr. Mukhbir. These scientists are frequently young, hardworking, and very active. They have worked hard to achieve this. We should also thank the other centers involved in this endeavor. A number of other centers are also busy working to produce the COVID vaccine, and they are in different phases of development. This was the first reason why I did not accept to get vaccinated until today. Secondly, I said that I would be willing to get vaccinated when it was my turn to do so, according to the country's regulations. Well, most of the elderly who are my age, the elderly who are 80 years old and above, have already been vaccinated.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. Missouri, where less than half of the population over the age of 18 has been fully inoculated, has emerged as the U.S. hotspot for the Delta strain, which officials say is fueling the alarming surge in coronavirus infections and hospitalizations that the state has experienced in recent weeks, even as cases decline in the U.S. as a whole. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jake Johnson, reporter. This article is published under the heading Dire Warnings as COVID Delta Variant Runs Rampant in Unvaccinated Missouri. Stay tuned for more. first detected in India and now present in at least 80 countries across the globe, the ultra-contagious Delta variant of COVID-19 is now running rampant through communities in the United States, with the most devastating impacts occurring in areas with low vaccination rates. Missouri, where less than half of the population over the age of 18 has been fully inoculated, has emerged as the U.S. hotspot for the Delta strain, which officials say is fueling the alarming surge in coronavirus infections and hospitalizations that the state has experienced in recent weeks, even as cases decline in the U.S. as a whole. Missouri currently has the highest rate of new COVID infections in the country. It's nearly 100% of the people hospitalized with COVID pneumonia are unvaccinated, said Dr. Robin Trotman, an infectious disease expert at Cox Health, a six-hospital nonprofit healthcare system headquartered in Springfield. Now, we do have vaccinated people who test positive, but they don't get severely ill. CNN reported recently that more than half of those admitted to the two major hospitals in Springfield area are from surrounding counties with limited health clinics. Those counties each have fully vaccinated rates below 20%, the outlet noted. The national average is more than twice that figure at 46%. According to the Associated Press, the coronavirus surge in Missouri is happening largely in a politically conservative farming region in the northern part of the state and in southwestern corner, which includes Springfield and Branson, the county music mecca in Ozark Mountains, where big crowds are gathering again at the city's theaters and other attractions. While over 53% of all Americans have received at least one shot, most southern and northern Missouri counties are well short of 40%, AP observed. One county is at just 13%. Eric Frederick, Chief Administrative Officer at Mercy Hospital Springfield, told AP that 60% to 65% of patients in the ICU at his facility last weekend were under the age of 40, a segment of the population that is less likely to be vaccinated. In recent days, local public health officials and federal experts have been sounding the alarm about the threat posed by the Delta strain in the hope that residents of other states will learn from the public health disaster that's unfolding in Missouri. If people elsewhere in the country are looking to us and saying no thanks and they're getting vaccinated, that is good, said Frederick. We will be the canary. During a press briefing earlier this week, Dr. Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, called the Delta variant the greatest threat in the U.S. to our attempt to eliminate COVID-19, unquote. Good news, vaccines are effective against the Delta variant, Fauci added. Conclusion, we have the tools, so let's use them and crush the outbreak. Though Missouri has seen the most acute consequences of the Delta variant thus far, the mutation is also spreading to Utah, New York, Nevada, Arkansas, and other states, raising concerns of an imminent nationwide spike in cases that could be followed by increased hospitalizations and deaths, particularly among the unvaccinated. An AP analysis recently found that nearly all COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. now are in people who weren't vaccinated. A staggering demonstration of how effective the shots have been, and an indication that deaths per day now down to under 300 could be practically zero if everyone eligible got the vaccine. But the U.S. vaccination drive has slowed in recent weeks, and the Biden White House conceded that it will miss its goal of getting 70% of the nation's adults at least partially vaccinated by July 4th. Citing a new Centers for Disease Control and Prevention analysis released recently, the Washington Post reported that vaccine resistance is greater among younger people. Just 38.3% of those ages 18 to 29 have been vaccinated, the Post noted, adding across all age groups, people living in counties with high rates of poor and uninsured people and less access to computers and the internet were less likely to be vaccinated. In general, rural and Republican areas have embraced vaccination less in cities and Democratic states in Northeast and along the West Coast. The Delta variant currently accounts for more than a third of all new coronavirus cases in the U.S. In India and the U.K., the strain is behind more than 90% of new infections. Officials in Sydney, Australia, are also rushing to contain Delta outbreak. After observing the startlingly swift rise of Delta variant in the U.K., other countries are bracing for the variant's impact if they aren't feeling it already. Nature's Ewan Calabay reported earlier this week. Nations with ample access to vaccines, such as those in Europe and North America, are hopeful that the shots can dampen the inevitable rise of Delta. But in countries without large vaccine stocks, particularly in Africa, some scientists worry that the variant could be devastating. Ashish Jill, Dean of the Brown University School of Public Health, warned in a series of tweets recently that the U.S. could soon see an infection surge similar to the one hitting the U.K., which has vaccinated a large percentage of its population. Adding, the U.K. experience suggests U.S. vaccination level will not be enough to ward off a Delta spike. The spike won't be uniform across the nation. Indeed, low-vax communities are particularly at risk.
World with reporters.
The month of Tir on the Iranian calendar marks a series of tragic events that occurred during the early years of the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. From the U.S. Army's shooting down of an Iranian airliner in 1988 to the 1981 bombing of the headquarters of the Iran Islamic Republic Party in Tehran by the U.S.-backed Mujahideen-e-Khalq terror group are examples of the incidents that fall in the same time frame, between late June and early July.
The U.S. footprints can be traced in almost all of the incidents that